And welcome to the Power Hour. I'm your host, Zachary Gilbert. My co-host, Dan Ford, has been arrested. As you're probably reading now, Dan Ford has been found out and accused of being the Winston-Salem Strangler. And we're not sure about his future on the show. So, but we move on, we persevere, and we're rooting for you, Dan. We move on, brought in a co-host for this week. It's going to be one Mr. West Coast Wes.
Yeah, thanks for having me under these circumstances. I'm happy to help. I know it was a last-minute thing, but this is obviously pretty big for the future of this podcast and the future of the nation, really, in a lot of ways, if what this ends up being is true. So I'm here to help out.
57 murders mostly occurred at a preschool. Dan, like, it was like an abandoned preschool that Dan would use to torture his victims and dress them up like children. It was really pretty scary stuff, to be honest. And you think you know somebody.
Well, yeah, you do. But that just goes to show that do you really know anybody, ultimately, when it comes down to it? And I guess if nothing else, I mean, it's morbid. It's sickening. I don't even like being in these shoes. I don't like being the replacement.
Wait, Wes, hang on, yes. Breaking. That was... I'm sorry, that was Tan Ford.
Oh.
I just got a message from Dan. Oh, he has work. That's where Dan is.
Oh, I see. Okay. Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah, you know, mistakes are made on it by all of us. And I was going to compliment the guy on being good at what he does, if nothing else, but it sounds like it was all a big mistake. And yeah, we never thought, of course, you never thought Dan.
Of course, I never. No. I'm glad that we didn't say anything we might. But yeah, Dan's out this week. He's had some work-related stuff. The criminal Tan Ford has been arrested. And speaking of criminals, let's start off with this weekend in conference championship ball. Our first criminal, Alabama. Huge victory over Florida. Wasn't even in doubt, really.
It kind of was in doubt
for a second there, wasn't it, Wes, actually, for the first quarter.
But was it in doubt, really? I mean, were you honestly sitting back and saying, well, you know, this is close score-wise? Florida has the lead early on here? Or were you thinking like I was thinking that this is simply just a matter of time and Alabama actually caring before they blow it wide open, which is exactly what happened?
Alabama kind of reminds me of like a strong water like kind of bursting through the dam. And it's like you think you have it stopped for about a quarter, and then it just keeps coming at you, and then the dam breaks, and then your whole town's flooded. And that's kind of what Alabama did to Florida. I mean, Florida, I thought, could have had a shot, but just, you know, you throw the picks early, and things just weren't very – things got nasty after the turnovers for Florida.
Yeah, you can't make mistakes.
But then on Friday before that, your boys, University of Washington, wins the Pac-12 championship and solidified a spot – in the college football playoffs, their first appearance.
It's surreal is the word that I would, I don't know. It's very, very nice to be in this position. I figured it would happen at some point, but not this quickly. That's the type of faith I had in Chris Peterson and his system and what he was building. But this, I mean, I don't know about you, but this happened awfully quick, and I'll take it.
Yeah, UW kind of reminds me of, like, maybe a girl who's a little overweight or sophomore year.
Husky,
kind of started
Husky,
working out this summer. Husky, yeah, started working out, went on a diet, gained a lot of self-confidence at camp, came back her junior year and looked smoking. And now she's going to the prom with the jock, the king. And they're going to run into the ultimate jock in the first round. That's Alabama.
They are, but it's one of those situations where I think, you know, most of the student body is still looking at this newly hot girl and thinking, well, you know, she's not much to write home about in comparison to the queen. But hey, I'm not going to go and predict a Washington victory by any stretch of the imagination. I know I got a little excited last week, but I will just say that they'll be prepared. And if it were up to me to guess, I think, I don't know what the spread's at right now. I think it was at 17.5 last time I checked. I wouldn't be surprised if you end up with a score like 31-21 or something along those lines. I think people will be surprised by Washington, and they might catch Alabama off guard early on at least.
Oh, and I'm interested in that game, actually. We'll have more time to really dissect and break that down. And then Saturday, we saw Clemson beat Virginia Tech. Closer than I thought, maybe, at times, but Clemson looked pretty good, I thought. Any just catching of that game by chance, Wes?
I saw. I was going back and forth with the Big Ten championship, and of course, the epic battle between Wyoming and San Diego State, which I'm sure we'll talk about here in a moment. But I think Clemson won a bunch of games close, and that in a lot of people's minds that makes them weak. But I have to take a look at the victories that Clemson did have and the schedule they played. Pretty strong, and they won the games they needed to win. So I think that Clemson, as far as Clemson's concerned, they're the team to me that could still challenge and win it all in spite of some of their struggles. I think they're battle tested, obviously, and that's what happened Saturday night. They got another team's best shot and still pulled it out. So I think Clemson's deserving of the spot they have. Let's put it that way.
And I think I think Clemson's been waiting to come back and play Alabama all year. I think they kind of discovered at the end of the game last year that they're not that scared of Alabama. I think it was a little too late in that game, but I'm really interested to see if Clemson, if they get past Ohio State, I like their chances the most to beat Alabama. I think they're ready. They've been ready for it all year. And this is a game they've been, you know, preparing for 365 days. So I don't think they'll have a problem with Ohio State, who win the Big Ten championship. That was won by one Pennsylvania State, as they beat Wisconsin in a pretty incredible comeback. And Wes, has the healing process begun?
Oh, geez. Well, yeah, Lord knows that Penn State alumni base and the program, the university, I mean, they were obviously the victims in that situation. So it's good to see that all is well within, and I'm glad that they can take steps towards fully healing after participating in the systematic child rape scandal that they were involved with. Not on the receiving end, mind you, but, you know, they have to be hurting, obviously.
Anytime you let someone get away with something like that, because he's a pretty decent defensive coordinator, you're going to get hurt when you kind of turn a blind eye to child rape, and then you get busted for it later down the road. I think we kind of felt the same way about this game. I felt just kind of sick after watching Penn State when it just... I think Penn State really got the punishment they deserved. Their fans would tell you the opposite, but their fans are morons, quite frankly. And I felt like Penn State, if any school deserved the death penalty ever, it would have been Penn State. And you kind of killed the death penalty, because if Penn State didn't get it, no one else really deserves it.
Yeah, what do you have to do to get the death penalty now is the question. I don't even want to know, because we've obviously accepted this. I mean, put yourself in this position. If Auburn had a high-level coordinator who was going on a child-raping spree, and not only that, but you've got, let's say, Gene Chizik for that one. Let's say it all happened in that one year, mm-hmm. and Chizik knew about it and everything. Now, how would you react if this comes out? I can only speak for myself. If it was the University of Washington, we deserve whatever punishment you want to throw at us. And I would feel it'd be tough for me to root in the same way for any team. And of course, these players are divorced from the situation. They have nothing to do with it as time goes on, of course. But still, I mean, I would have a very tough time. And so to watch a group of individuals, granted, it's probably maybe a vocal minority of Penn State fans, although I don't know about that. But to watch them try to explain it away and to listen to Gus Johnson just go over the top with all this nonsense about healing, as you mentioned, it was enough to make me turn away from it. I couldn't watch any of that post-game stuff, and I heard it was as disgusting as I thought it would be.
Yeah, but you bring up the Auburn. It's not even of Chizik. It's like if Pat Dye, the greatest coach in the history of your program, something who cemented a legacy, you named fields, you have statues built for this person, and he was covering up something like that. So it's not even like if I was a Baylor fan and you have what Art Briles did, because that's not what the program was necessarily built around for so many years. It's something much worse. It's the greatest coach in the history of your school who built that program up and turned it into a national name. And it's all tainted forever.
Yeah, yeah. This is like the UW and Don James, largely considered to be the greatest coach in the history of this school, the dog father, as it were. I mean, if he's involved in something like that, I don't ever want to hear his name again. Tear down any statues, any mention of the guy's name. I'm not going to hold him in reverence at all. And so to see it still go on is pretty disheartening, but that just shows you how disillusioned and, I don't even know what the word is that I'm looking for, to be honest with you. How
sickening? maybe
sickening,
disgusting.
Yeah, delusional was the word that I was looking for. Yeah, it's people. It's college football over everything else, and that's it's confusing to me. But I guess I didn't grow up in the right area.
Yeah. So we had that travesty, but at the same time, we had another travesty. A team that's close to you and my heart, Wyoming, loses to San Diego State in the Mountain West Championship game at home. The biggest game in probably Wyoming history, especially since there's been color TV.
Thank God for color TV, too, because you just really don't get the full effect of that Wyoming field, those Wyoming uniforms, without color TV. I mean, is there a better combination?
Brown on yellow.
Ooh, just, it's delicious. And I know that our good friend Dan Ford, incarcerated or not, is a big believer in Craig Bull, as we all are. And so to see them come up short on a really what was a horrific last final drive to try and win that game left me a little sour. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to get into this college football playoff, to be honest with you. I'm looking more at BYU and Wyoming in that bowl game to see if our boys can't get right back up on the horse and ride to victory.
Cowboys versus Mormons. I've heard it's called. So it's very exciting. And we had another championship game. We had a few more, actually. With it. We have another one that people might have actually watched. And that's the SWAC champ. No, that's the American Championship as Temple upsets Navy.
As far as watching it goes, I may have missed the majority of it live. I mean, I can't remember what I was doing exactly, and I have no excuse for missing it.
I was sleeping.
Oh, go ahead. Where were you? Okay.
Saturday, well, I'm not getting out of bed until like 1. You kidding me?
Well, if you were sleeping on the East Coast, then I was probably sleeping on the West Coast at the same time. And so it was tough for any of us to catch that game. But, I mean, really, both teams headed in different directions now with, well, I guess Navy, we can talk about they still have a game left to play, the biggest game of them all. But Temple, obviously making
the most
a coaching
important
change
game
now.
Too.
Oh, God.
And it kind of, you know, but if Navy won, me and Dan didn't really talk about it last week, but it would have kind of created a little bowl chaos because they probably would have gone to a BCS bowl or a New Year's Day bowl or whatever the hell we're calling it now. Mm-hmm. And they would have, I think the selection committee would have to wait another week to kind of see the result of Army Navy, which meant every bowl game would almost get delayed in terms of who you can pick and who you can't.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. So Temple did us a huge favor, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and they saved a lot of people who have the easiest job in the world a headache, and that's bowl presidents. So thank God we saved those guys.
Yeah,
you know,
it really, yeah,
from
really,
having to do out. Any work.
Yeah, they Jesus, Lord knows they aren't paid well enough. So you gotta really thank Navy, but also it's good because, as you said, they take that decision off the table, but now we can really focus on Army-Navy for what it is, and it's just the best collection of college football talent that this nation can produce. I mean, short of a three-way with Air Force, I don't know how else you would improve it. I know you've got to be excited, as I am.
No, I am, because I love the troops, so like I don't hate America. So like, if you don't watch this game, you pretty much go piss on the flag, commie.
That's right.
Taliban communist.
You sick bastards.
And, you know, if you took every player from all three of those teams, put them in the NFL, who's to say they wouldn't win every game? You know?
I mean, who could beat them?
Who's going to beat the troops? You know, like Kaepernick, I'm sure, is going to be very excited to win that game. But I'd love to watch the troops beat Kaepernick and stuff a flag up his throat, if you know what I'm saying.
I do. Taste.
Because if there's
flag.
Nothing the military is good at, is ganging up on a small group of light-skinned brown people and killing them mercilessly.
So I mean, you just talk about the caliber of athlete as well. I mean, you're talking about, well, you got to have guys in the Army that are running, I don't know, 4.8, 4.9, 40s on the top end, and you know, physical specimens all around. I just think we'd be in for, it'd be like if you took LeBron James and prime Michael Vick and Earl Campbell, and you just took all
put
their
them in a tank.
And, Oh, you put them in some camo and a tank and you set them free in the sports world. I mean, I'm glad they don't do it because we'd never be the same. No, and we wouldn't want to watch anything else. It would ruin every sport is what it would do.
And it would ruin all wars because who's going to stop LeBron James, Michael Jordan, and Michael Vick in a tank? It's more dangerous than the hydrogen bomb.
It sure is. So again, we have to thank the troops for what they've done, not only on the battlefield, but for what they haven't done in the environment of sports.
So God bless the troops. But I do like watching this game every year. Both teams run the option. It's just kind of cool. Like I'm not the biggest, you know, to be truthful, I'm not the biggest like troops America patriotism guy. But this game to me is like one of the reasons college football is really cool. It's something I can get behind. It's something special, and you don't really get this in the NFL or the CFL or even the XFL back in the day. You don't really get anything this special.
You don't. It's a historic game. They've been playing since the 1890s or whatever it's been. And
do they suspend that game for wartime? I wonder if they just play that in Normandy. That's what I'd like to know.
I think the game takes place regardless of what's going on. So you're right. This game may have happened in a number of different environments. I'll have to check the history book on that. I also was kind of wondering about the involvement of certain political figures. Do you think any of the big names will be there at the game this weekend to watch, if you know what I'm saying? Maybe.
President-elect Trump, do you think he makes an appearance? Probably not.
Nah.
He's not going to Philadelphia, wherever it is.
Yeah, I was hoping for maybe a coin Obama. Toss.
His last time, I think he's been to one, right? I'm assuming he was rightfully booed by the troops.
He probably was booed out of the place, but you know, maybe going out, he shows up, and who knows? You suit him up as a nice little third down slot receiver to get you 6 yards on a slant or something along those.
Maybe
lines.
He shows up in a Temple jersey. F you to the Navy.
That's an interesting angle. Show up on the sideline sporting his best Owls gear and just to let him know how he feels truthfully. I mean, maybe think about it. I mean, who would you pick in this current political environment? Let's throw out the affiliations and let's just talk personalities. I mean, if you could start a football team with one of these guys as a coach, for instance, I mean, who do you go with? Do you go with Obama right now? Or do you look to the what do you think?
What sport? We're
talking
basketball?
Football.
Okay, football.
Let's do football first. Let's do football.
Okay, football. You would think a guy like Trump, but I think that could blow up in your face big time.
He doesn't have the X's and O's. Yeah, exactly. He needs a coordinator, if nothing else.
Yeah. I think that's the issue with a lot of our main politicians. You're going to need a coordinator. I'd love to see Senator Harry Reid out there running the triple option.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think that deep, but that is good.
But I'm sure, is Joe Gibbs or somebody? Heath Shuler? Isn't there a congressman who used to play football?
Joe Gibbs, he may be. I don't know. I mean, he is still alive. I know this much. He dabbled. I don't know. It's a tough decision. You're right. You need a staff is what you need. You can't just say, well, I picked this guy. Obviously, you know who to start with at the top
I'll tell you what. If I'm bringing in an offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator, I can fire willy-nilly to kind of save my ass. Bring in Chris Christie. He's my scapegoat coach right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see him filling the shoes of a Brady Hoke type scenario or something along. There's a lot of physical similarities there, at least.
I think maybe like a Greg Williams in L.A. Like, Christie might actually come in for Fisher because he's the perfect guy to pass the blame on to. Just, hey,
that's true.
Had to fire my coordinator. Sorry, can't fire me.
That's true.
Big sacrifice, so...
What about like a Dick Cheney type of character to really take your organization in the right direction?
Yeah, I want Cheney as my GM. Imagine that guy on draft day, some of the deals. Be just like the movie draft.
It certainly would. I think if you put together an upper management group of a Dick Cheney, and you throw in, you know, Colin Powell to kind of balance things out, and then you go and get David Duke to really covet a certain part. I mean, you're looking at success is what you're looking at.
What about a Cheney Obama? Maybe Obama's the coach, Cheney's my GM. I'm liking that team.
I like that team too. I mean, there's some friction there.
Harry Reid's known for knowing all the Senate rules. Perfect assistant GM.
Yeah.
He could play the fat kid from Superbad and the Moneyball. That would be his role.
I think you're onto something here.
Sorry, Dan.
I think you're onto something. Yeah. Sorry about this. Here's the point, though. You're onto something. It's not about picking a group of individuals who you think would work together nicely. You want that friction there, but that's how you build a quality team. It's with the minds and the different types of personalities as opposed to going with something like, well, let's just put the Clintons all in there and stuff. I mean, you know,
Okay, let's go the other way. Which football guy coach would make the best transition into politics?
Oh, my goodness gracious. Are we talking high level?
Any level.
Well, you know, Pete Carroll.
Jerry Glanville in there? Pete Carroll? Well, Pete Carroll's he's like a Jill Stein type, right? Like
that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, you know, Pete Carroll probably isn't the guy to go with in this particular situation.
Well, he is corrupt.
Yeah, he is. That's true. If you can just sway him, it might work out. Did you say Jerry Glanville, though? You're going to go with Jerry Glanville in this situation.
Jerry Glanville, I think like governor of like South Dakota.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, I go with another Jerry. I go with Jerry Jones, and I push him all the way to the top. I just think it's perfect.
All right, so that was the Army-Navy preview, and Navy favored by 6.5. I like Army to win. Why not?
Really?
Suck at the Navy.
Well, didn't Navy lose Keenan Reynolds this weekend to a leg injury?
I think that's the person on their team. And yeah, he...
Yeah. It's actually all I know. It's all I know. I'm going with Army as well.
Yeah.
I'll take Army.
I'm going with Army here. But fun side Navy fact, did you know Top Gun is about naval fighter pilots, not the Air Force?
Oh, no, I didn't know that. You would assume that it was Air Force Academy.
Yeah, but it was actually Navy. So there you go. Little fun fact. What? And let's jump now into the NFL, Wes.
Let's. This is where I shine. I know that much.
This is where I know people's names. So here we go.
Yeah.
And let's start off with last week. Anything pop out to you last week before we get to what happened to my Falcons? We'll save that for last in my misery.
Okay.
Something I like this week, though. Baltimore dominating Miami. Baltimore's really cementing themselves as a team that could, I think, surprise somebody in the playoffs. That's why we'll talk about it later, but this Monday, that game interests me, them versus the Patriots. I really like the way Baltimore's playing.
So you like Baltimore to hold off. I'm going to pose this question. I think I know the answer already, but you like Baltimore to hold that division off, especially with the Steelers and the way that they're maybe their inconsistencies, as we've highlighted in weeks past.
I think there's a chance to steal. Like, everybody's picking them to beat the Bills this week. I'm not super sold on that one. I think they kind of remind me of my Falcons in a weird way. Just kind of with that inconsistency, with that strong offense, we can get you out of a lot of jams. Obviously, their defense is much better, but I just really like the way Baltimore is playing, and dare I say Flacco looking elite.
He sure is. He sure is looking elite right now, and they did that to a Dolphins team. As we accurately predicted last week, we felt that Baltimore had the advantage solely based on the home field, if nothing else. But I think they are the stronger team, as they proved, and I kind of like them as a team that could really throw a wrinkle into the plans of, say, the Oakland Raiders or the Patriots even, because there's just something there's no gimmick to the Baltimore Ravens. They do what they do, and they put away a team like the Giants. The Steelers are the team that beat the Giants, but the point is
Miami is having a good year.
Well, they were on fire.
And if you're Kansas City, you're going to have to probably run into Baltimore maybe in the first round unless you beat Oakland this week. And that's – if I'm a KC fan, I don't want that. I want to go play that Southern winner.
Don't we all? I mean, that would be a much easier path. I like the Ravens too. I think if I had to pick – I mean, right now the Raiders are the hottest team in the AFC, but if I had to put my money on somebody – and I had to go away from New England right now, I mean, the Ravens would be the next in line. They're familiar with the situation, and they bring their A game in the playoffs. I mean, they're never an easy out.
No, I really like the way that team is playing. Something else I noticed going to the game last night or on Monday night, the Jets have just quit. I don't know how much of that when you call it, but they're not even really trying. It's kind of pathetic to see what's going on with the Jets. You've got seats selling for $5 in the Meadowlands. You had a defense to get carved up by Dwayne Allen, the tight end of all people. Bad juju with the Jets, and I'm not sure they fix anything. I think they go out and get another. I think they get Cutler, and they don't fix anything. I don't think they're going to learn any lessons from the season.
Man. Well, I caught more than I should have caught of that game, and we joke around on this show all the time about these bad games in the NFL and these bad Thursday night matchups that we've gotten in the past, and how the early part of the season suffered. And we talk about these teams like Houston, and we obviously bring up teams like Cleveland, but I don't think I've seen a less entertaining team than the Jets. Let's put it that way. Not only have they given up, but all of their players who were supposedly talented certainly don't look like it anymore. I guess Brandon Marshall is what he is. He can't get himself the ball, but Ryan Fitzpatrick is, as a guy who I've stood up for in the past, has taken just 10 steps backward. And you're right, there's no reason to be hopeful. I mean, I don't think anybody's happy about Mike Pence was in the luxury suite last night there. So maybe some kind of radical change is coming to New York. But
did the teams turn around and address them after the game? Hamilton situation.
It was kind of an interesting situation. Nothing like that happened, but it was, to me, they're playing. It's Indianapolis. You figure maybe Mike Pence is there supporting it. No, he's sitting with the Jets brass. And so I don't know what's going on there, but maybe that's what they need, because short of a radical change, I'm with you. I don't think anything goes differently. They seem to draft very poorly year after year. They put in Bryce Petty last night, and while he's young, I doubt he's the answer long term. So no. I think it's even worse than being a team like Cleveland or San Francisco, where if nothing else, you'll get a high draft pick out of this. I think the Jets are screwed for several years.
No, I think so too. And like, I didn't really mean to examine the Jets because they just don't feel that interesting. But this is a team that needs like a deep cleaning from, like, they don't have one of the better owners, like an owner who kind of coasts by because he's in New York. And if he was an owner anywhere else, you'd kind of know how shitty he is. It's a bad situation, and the whole thing needs to be scrubbed and cleaned, and they need a clean house there. Like, the Jets look like there's no hope for that team. There's not really any young player on the Jets I look at. And I'm like, well, they can build around him. It's nothing there. Not on deep, nowhere, really.
If from what I know in talking to true Jets fans, I mean, Woody Johnson is an owner that is, like you said, no real vision there, highly influenced by the people around him, which is never a good thing because you're constantly asking for decisions to be made for you and things of that nature. And
well, people who are going to take advantage of their situation and just sit in mediocrity and get away with it and go out and sign a, you know, Fitzpatrick, when what they should have done is cleaned house and drafted better and probably tanked for a year or two. But they keep putting these Band-Aids on there, and it's not making things better.
You're not going to get anywhere when you are asking of the opinions of others, and they've got their own interests in mind. That doesn't work. You're not going to get anywhere with, unfortunately, Fitzpatrick has proven, like you said, that it's over with, and maybe it should have been last year, but if there was any doubt that he could be a short-term fix, it's out the window. They constantly seem to have a new, uninspiring running back in that position year after year.
To be fair, Forte has had a pretty decent year, but he's been better than most of their running backs have been in the past couple of years, but I mean, I even go back to, I mean, this is a team that was in two consecutive AFC championships, you know, what, 3-4 years ago?
Yeah.
And now they're one of the worst teams in the league, and it just seems like they just missed the boat, and I think they jumped the gun too soon, because they never really had a quarterback who could win when that defense was good. So
yeah,
I think,
they were flirting with the play. I mean, this is a playoff team as of last year, or close at least, but it just seems like they finally really fell off the cliff, and now you're left with nothing to build around. I like a guy like Leonard Williams on defense, but it's not enough to get excited about. And on top of that, you feel like whoever they have who has potential right now, it's going to be lost because they'll just be eaten by the machine that is the Jets right now. And so you're right. Matt Forte hasn't had a bad year, and he's not a bad back at all. But does anybody even really know he's playing for the Jets right now? Of course not. That's what happens with the New York Jets,
unfortunately. And that was talking Jets. Probably the most time we've spent on the Jets all year. But it does, just the team that just bothered me kind of thinking about it Monday night, it's just, you're in New York. Like, at least the Giants are a serviceable franchise. You've done nothing.
Yeah.
Really, ever. Better than this. You know?
Yeah, it's been a long, long damn time. Yeah. And that it goes to show that this is the podcast that is spending the most time on the Jets out of any podcast, probably this side of the Mississippi, well, I guess outside of New York, let's put it that way.
Yes.
So
we are number one non-New York metro area Jets podcast. Yep. Another badge to add to the Power Hour banner here on halfguarded.com. But we move on, though. I want to talk about your Seahawks on Sunday night. It looked like the offense was back, but is that a little premature, Wes? Because Carolina is banged up on defense, and they are missing maybe the best linebacker of the game, Luke Kuechly.
Yeah, man, now we're getting back into politics and what have you. But I think you're right, though. Carolina, I mean, they're a little banged up, period. Whether it's on offense, defense, psychologically, spiritually. I mean, that looked like a team that's flat out given up. I think their one last gasp was against the Raiders the week before when they actually pulled ahead and you thought maybe it happens. And then the Raiders slammed the door on them and then they show up and do what they do. Starting Derek Anderson for one play on. Now, let me ask you this. We hear that Cam Newton kept off the field because he violates a dress code policy. He doesn't wear a tie. Do you believe that that is the real reason for putting Derek Anderson in as your starting quarterback and starting things off? Now, what do you think?
Okay, my thing with Cam, though, is it had to be that or, like, he talked back to the coach. It's something, like, very immature and childish. Like, I don't think there's no grand conspiracy with Cam where he's, like, did something that's actually bad. He just acted like an immature kid, and he's a child at heart. It's just what Cam is. It's a big kid.
That's what I think, too. We're not looking at, for instance, a child rape situation.
No. Or a dog fighting situation. This is probably like he didn't make up his bed in the morning type thing, and then he got grounded for that.
A curfew violation. Whether,
I don't know if it was the tie thing. I respect a quarterback who doesn't want to get a tie. That's just Dang. Going for the win.
Yep.
You know? But it's just another black mark on this Panther season, and it's been a disaster. And I can't blame Cam for the year. He's had an okay year, but he's got no one around him. And Olsen's fallen off the planet.
He sure has. I can't blame Cam at all. I mean, any other human being wouldn't even be upright right now after the punishment that he took early on in the year and in weeks after that as well. So, yeah, that was more – I'm with you. I don't think it was anything serious. I think it is more likely that maybe it's a culmination of little things in terms of immaturity, like you said, and they just used this tie excuse to explain it away. But to answer your question, though – yeah, don't get too excited about the Seattle offense because I think a lot of teams could do that to Carolina right now.
Yeah, I think we'll see more about Seattle, and we'll get to this when they play Green Bay this week, who has a pretty decent run defense. But if you're a Seattle fan, like yourself, you got to be kind of happy with it because your offense did look good against a bad team, and I'd rather blow out a bad team than struggle and barely win. So I think there is signs of life there for Seattle, but then you go and you lose Earl Thomas, and that probably shuts down your Super Bowl chances right there, I'd imagine.
It puts a pretty big dent to them. That's what I'll say. Watching that game, it was hard to get excited about anything after that happened. And there was a lot of fun to be had watching that game. But in the back of your mind, you know that Earl Thomas has gone down with a serious injury. And then it turns out it's possibly a career-ending injury if he follows through on his promises of retiring, perhaps. You know, considering retiring, I should say. Yeah. And I don't know if that was an emotional statement, but he's an emotional guy, and I could see him walking away, and I wouldn't blame him. I wouldn't hold anything against him at all. I think people are silly who would. But as far as this year goes, I mean, I think they're a talented enough team where they still obviously will make their way into the playoffs being in that division and probably get a game early on. But I didn't like their chances with Earl Thomas overall. And with him out, I think it leaves a lot to be desired in that secondary now.
No, I think that, but I think it's the first time in his career we can really say the whole team's on Russell Wilson's back. And he's responded okay so far. And I think we'll see in the postseason how great Russell really – I think Russell Wilson's a great quarterback, don't get me wrong. But we'll see if he's one of the all-time greats with this playoff performance, especially with this team. And he's banged up too, but he's been carrying the team.
Exactly, exactly. He has done a remarkable job considering the injuries he had and still does have. I think he's probably headed for at least a minor surgery, if such a thing exists, once the offseason rolls around. But it is on his back because that offensive line, don't ever be fooled if they have a good game, because it usually comes against a poor defensive rush. And they're still a very piss-poor offensive line. So it will be on Wilson to make things happen quickly. And then, as you know, you get to the playoffs, you play good teams, things are going to break down a lot more quickly. So nice year, but I don't see it happening.
Yeah. And that's it for last week. No other team did anything really dumb or stupid. Right, Wes?
Wait, hold on. Wait a second. One second. Yeah. You may. Are you skipping over the local team?
No, I think that's it. Yeah, I don't think. I think Atlanta had a bye week.
Oh, is that right? Is that right? You don't want to talk about Eric Berry at all. You hear anything about what he made?
Yeah. Okay, we'll get into that game. If you didn't see the game, you probably heard about it. Atlanta throws a pick six, or a pick two, to lose the game when they're up by a point for less than a minute, or less than a second of game time. A really frustrating loss for Atlanta and a great win for KC. They kind of backdoored their way into a win. I think they're – how many points do their special teams and defense combine for? I think it's 8. A little math there. 14 points almost. So, I mean, nice. And that won you the game for KC. There was one from a fake punt and then two returns for a touch or for points. But as I was kind of talking to you before, as an Atlanta fan, I'm not super worried. Because, A, something dumb happens to us every year. This is Atlanta. We're the Falcons. Yeah. Something dumb. We're just going to lose in a dumb way. But we also lost from mistakes we made. And that was Ryan throwing a pick. Quinn not kicking the field goal when he should have, you know, down in the red zone. And, you know, kind of getting out-coached by Reed on that special teams, you know, the fake punt for a touchdown. So these feel like fixable things and things maybe Quinn will learn from. Because he is only a second-year coach, and you have to fail to learn, I guess. So I'm not too concerned. I'll be concerned when the Rams beat us this week, which I'm kind of locking in. It's going to happen. I got a little theory, but we'll get to that one later.
Well, I just wanted to commend you for what I thought was a very mature response as we talked about this game briefly before starting the recording of this grand show. You put it into perspective. You said you're used to dealing with things like this year after year as a Falcons fan. And if something like this is going to happen, you might as well get it out of the way in week 12 or whatever it was and fix your mistakes, because you said, those were self-inflicted wounds to some degree. So why not move on from it? And with a manageable schedule up ahead, you can get some momentum going into the playoffs. And then if you find yourself with a favorable matchup in the playoffs, I mean, who knows? This is the year to make a statement and not be a juggernaut team. We don't have one of those out there right now. So,
Yeah, but like I said, you know, it wasn't like the Seattle game where the refs stole it and, you know, the Pete Carroll paid off the league to make sure we'd lose that game.
That's what we do. I mean, we'll get wins here however we need to. No shame in it either.
All that Adderall money. But there is a team nipping Atlanta's heels, and we haven't talked about them, and that's Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is looking like a really good team right now. Dare I say, championship contender?
Well, again, if something crazy is going to happen, I think this is a good year for that to happen. I know that you're huge on Mike Evans. I mean, I'm surprised when we were talking about players and coaches for president that you didn't throw Mike Evans' name out there.
Well, Mike Evans doesn't even vote.
Well,
if I remember correctly, he protested the he didn't even come out for the national anthem because Trump won, and he also didn't vote. So that's Mike Evans. Maybe not more of a football guy. He's too busy watching film. You know.
So let's put that all aside and talk about the football acumen of Mike Evans. But I think you're right there. Tampa Bay looking like the team to win it all. I know we love them here at the Power Hour. We can't wait to see them win next week and every week after. And this is
we certainly don't hope that they go the way of Philadelphia or Minnesota, even Miami, other Power Hour endorsed teams.
Yeah, exactly.
We certainly hope nothing like that would happen.
This is not a jinx attempt at all. No, this is sincere. I hoped. I mean, James, he couldn't possibly get injured or something like that this week. That couldn't happen. I think this team goes all the way perfectly healthy in the process as well.
But, you know, you do mention health, and that does kind of bring me to an interesting point with Tampa Bay. They've already had Doug Martin get hurt, and he's back. Charles Sims is coming off the IR this week. So the guys they lost, they kind of maintain and still won in spite of having those guys gone. And then they're coming back kind of a little more rested and not with as much wear and tear. That makes them kind of dangerous in the playoffs to me. Especially your running back to not be as worn down. Be able to have a guy with fresh legs kind of come in there and do things for you in the playoffs.
It's kind of like the Thomas Rawls situation in Seattle. Mm-hmm. I mean, Thomas Rawls looked dynamite on Sunday night, and granted, he is a fine player, but these guys do have an extra pep in their step, if you will. If you've gotten weeks off due to injury, and your bump card, so to speak, hasn't been checked too many times this year, and so you've got a certain advantage. It's almost like having little mini bye weeks for certain sectors of your team. Mm-hmm. So Tampa Bay is going to benefit from that. Now they play the Saints this week, and we've known the Saints organization to be guilty of some dirty things in the past. Do you think something like that could happen? Could we go for the headshot, if you will?
I think maybe a nut shot would be the way to go. Because it is New Orleans, and they are dirty. They're dirty, dirty, bad people.
Yeah, go low.
So, yeah, maybe some going low from New Orleans this week. But you bring up this week's slate of games, and I think we've got a really fun week here in the NFL. After so-so weird weather kind of thing from last week, we kick off Oakland going to Kansas City. Kansas City, 3-point favorite on Thursday night.
Ooh.
Two of the hottest teams in the NFL.
Yeah, I dare say the two best teams as it stands right now in the NFL. These two teams, both playing very well, coming off big victories week after week, really. And oh, man, I'm inclined to go with Kansas City this week. I think Oakland has to give one up at some point here. And this is not me saying that Oakland isn't for real. I mean, we've been saying the same thing with Dallas now for how many weeks? And it almost happened. We'll get to that later. But I'm gonna go with Kansas City by 6 here. How about yourself?
Hey, I think with Kansas City, you're looking at especially these last two wins. I'm not saying that they didn't earn those wins, but they did kind of get lucky with certain bad coaching decisions. Whether that was kicking the field goal in overtime or not kicking field goals in Dan Quinn's case. I don't know if their luck continues against Oakland. Oakland's had a lot of things go their way this year. I think this is going to be a nasty 3-0, 6-3 type game. I don't think we're going to see a lot of offense.
Oh, 6-3. What's the over-under on this baby? Do you happen to know that off the top of your head, Mr.
The top of my head, I would imagine it's around 46 points.
You'd imagine.
So Vegas thinks a lot more points than me. I don't think so. I think we'll see a cold, plotting, a lot of running, especially from Kansas City. I think Oakland wins in a squeaker. I like Oakland.
Really?
I like Jenikowski to get a big field goal and win the game. How about
right
that?
Right now, it is 32 degrees in Kansas City. And we're, think about it, in 2 days, we're talking about into the first quarter, beginning of the second quarter, maybe right now. So you are right. It stands 29 degrees is the high for Thursday in Kansas City. So
I heard 24 game time temperature. So yeah,
fair enough. Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, not only are you a human calculator, not only a social scientist, a meteorologist as well in his spare time. And this guy is calling for freezing cold weather, which you're right, lends itself to low scoring, hard hitting, very punishing games. I just am on the Kansas City side of the coin in this particular case. You like Sebastian Janikowski, though, to get it.
I like, and the special teams, and my boy Marquette King to punt his way to victory. This will be a great battle of punts, though. A lot of great punting in this game.
Yeah, well, that's what we all hope for week after week. The kicking game.
But then we move on to Sunday. And the first game I want to kind of take a look at, both teams need a win here. Denver, Tennessee. Denver goes to Tennessee. Tennessee favored by one. Not loving Mariota's chances here, but DeMarco Murray and Henry should have big games. Denver's run D's been lackluster all year. I've kind of felt like, and Tennessee runs the ball great. I like Tennessee to get the win here.
I do too. I'm not, again, we've kind of been going south on Denver, I feel like, for the past month or so. Just gradually, nothing, no bold statements or anything like that, like Denver's done or Denver sucks or Denver's a pretender. I don't think any of that is true.
I think Denver can still be a playoff team, to be honest, especially if Miami kind of falls off.
No doubt about it. I think they play in the best division in the NFL right now, quietly. I mean, I know that's a controversial statement, but I'll put those AFC West teams up against a lot of any other division, really. But Denver, to me, it's troubling to see what they've been doing in the past few weeks, not looking impressive, not even against a team like Jacksonville last week. I like Tennessee to get it done as well, because they have just as much to play for, if not more.
Yeah. And I think they play ball control. Like that's, I like the spread here where Tennessee is a pick 'em, basically, by one.
Yeah.
Because I think Tennessee, this will be close, but I think it'll be a plodding game where Tennessee runs out the clock as much as possible. Just tries not to make mistakes. Probably if you've got Mario on your fantasy team, don't play him this week. Maybe a month.
Saturday. No, that's a good point. Before I get on to what I was going to say, and Mariota, as far as numbers wise, I don't look for impressive things on either side of the ball, really. But I do like Tennessee. I do like Tennessee in a 50-degree game, roughly, with a little bit of rain in the forecast as well.
No, I believe so that game's on Sunday.
It is.
I thought you said Saturday. We don't have our Saturday games yet, Wes.
No. I know. I'm getting too excited. If I did say Saturday, it's just because I'm so excited for Saturday.
For double color rush. I can't.
Yeah. Oh, the Jets. They'll be back in our lives again, and we'll get to enjoy it. But no, Sunday weather in Nashville, 50 degrees, a little precipitation. I think it all leads to a Tennessee victory. Slim, but a victory.
All right. I've kind of got an upset. I've got two upsets this week. This is my first one. Cincinnati going to Cleveland. Cincinnati favored by 6.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Cleveland gets a win this week, and they beat Cincinnati. RG3 coming back leads them to victory. Oh, and Cincinnati's really bad. They're done.
Yeah.
And Cleveland can't lose every game. I just don't think it'll happen, and I think you'll have the Lions popping Mad Dog 20. As they continue the only winless team in NFL history.
Probably.
What do you think? Am I crazy for thinking this is Cleveland's probably last big shot at winning? They do play Buffalo, and Buffalo's known to do dumb things too, but it feels like this is their last chance.
This one, I think it adds up to a possible victory for the Browns. Here's why. First of all, weather, snow in the forecast. Ugly, ugly game. All bets go out the window. As we've talked about, when things get cold and the snow comes down, and you can picture a dirty game between these two teams struggling to put points on the board. And I also think Cincinnati's win over Philadelphia is more on Philadelphia than anything else. I think that's misleading coming out of last week. I too think the Bengals are done with. That being said, I can't pick the Browns right now. I'm just not going to do it. I just won't. I think you have good reason to, but I'm going to go with the Browns in a 9-4 victory. Two safeties getting points on the board for Cleveland in weird ways. But no, I'm going with the Bengals still. I'm sorry.
All right, we get another interesting. You speak of maybe bad weather, and I'm just assuming because of where the game is taking place. Pittsburgh goes to Buffalo.
Ugh.
Buffalo's kind of done. They're sitting at 6-6. I mean, maybe they win out. They can still go to the playoffs, obviously. So this is kind of a must-win here. Pittsburgh needs to win, too, especially with Baltimore playing New England and maybe less likely to win. I think Pittsburgh fucks up and Buffalo wins. Roethlisberger might have a bad game, be my guess.
Buffalo, yeah, well, I think that's always a possibility. We've spoken to the inconsistency of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Just not knowing what to expect week in and week out. Buffalo, never a pleasant environment this week. Snow in the forecast for Buffalo as well. I think the Bills if they can get out early, they seem to be able to. They need to put some distance in between themselves and the Steelers early on in order to win. I think that's the key to this game. They didn't do enough of that with the Raiders. They got up early on Oakland. You thought it was going to be the end of the Oakland run for a while there, and then all of a sudden it's 38-24 to end that game out, and Buffalo's completely gone downhill. But I'll go with the Bills as well. I think the Bills go home. They get a little bit of that love. And I think we see a little – I see we Big Ben banged up late second quarter. Landry Ooh. Jones for the rest of the game. And it goes to hell after that somehow.
So that could be where Cleveland does beat Pittsburgh once Roethlisberger gets hurt once they're out of the playoffs. Ooh, another big game this week. Pretty huge game, yes, especially if you're a Falcons fan. New Orleans, Tampa Bay. New Orleans going to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay favored by 2.5. I figure Tampa Bay's got to keep winning, right?
Yeah, if Tampa's losing starts anytime soon, it's not this week. Guys, the Saints, what a dismal effort last week against the Lions.
And in a dome, so you can't even do the old "it was outdoors" excuse for Drew Brees.
Nope. So it's just, nope. It was pathetic. I'm going with the Buccaneers as well. I go with the Buccaneers by 17 in this game.
Yeah, but Yeah, Buccaneers by 7, but only because the Saints score like 2 touchdowns with 3 minutes left. Because they always do something dumb like that.
That backdoor deal, yeah.
Yeah, the old backdoor Saints. All right, another maybe the Fox game of the week. Seattle goes to Green Bay. Seattle 2.5 point favorite. Oh. Who you liking here, Wes, with your Seahawks playing Green Bay? Our arch enemy on the podcast,
Aaron Rodgers. Aaron, the Scientologist, time traveling son of a bitch himself. I mean, I am nervous about this game. So just coming off the heels of the Earl Thomas injury, I feel like there's something against Seattle this year. A lot of banged up players all year long, and Green Bay now amassing some victories here. Plus, going back to Lambeau, I don't feel good about this at all. I've picked against Seattle, or at least against the spread. I don't know. I got to go with Green Bay here. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to everybody out there. I'm sorry to this podcast. I'm sorry to you.
I think I like Seattle to win here, and here's why.
All right.
Green Bay, a lot of coaching's coming back to kind of really bite them on the ass, when you think, especially with the run game. They've been really stubborn about not giving Ty Montgomery the ball. They did last week, and he got 40 yards at the end of the game. But I think they're going to keep doing dumb stuff, like going to James Starks and forcing stuff to the wrong receivers. I really like the way Seattle's looked on offense, especially with Russell Wilson's play. Green Bay's rush defense has been nice, but their pass defense has been suspect at times. I like Seattle to win in a blowout. Three touchdowns. Okay. Yeah.
All right, then. Well, let me just say this. I don't want to blow the Earl Thomas thing too out of proportion, because I do think he is – he's kind of key in the way they play defense with the single high safety, and he allows Sherman and Chancellor to do things they may not normally be able to do. But it's not like the defense falls apart. I mean, they've gotten good play at the other corner with Deshaun Shedd out there. And Stephen Terrell, the guy that is going to be filling in for Earl Thomas, is not a bad player in his own right. Now, there's a drop-off, obviously, when you lose one of the best safeties in the game. But it's not like you're going to see this team just get lit up, I don't think.
No, and this is still a good tackling team. Like, this isn't a team that you may see them give up a big pass to Jordy Nelson, but he's going to get tackled right now. That is Jordy Nelson's game, but they're not going to give up a lot of big plays, especially after the catch. And that means you can do stuff like force Green Bay into kicking field goals and just little things like that that kind of help you win. And I think Seattle does that because they're still going to play tight, good red zone defense. And I don't love Green Bay's weapons in the red zone.
And two, a lot of people are probably looking at what happened immediately after Earl Thomas went down. What did Carolina do? They go deep over the middle. Everybody thinks that's on Stephen Terrell. It actually wasn't. That was a mistake on, I can't remember if it was Bobby Wagner or Cam Chancellor, but that was one of them that was on. Was not on Terrell in that particular situation. They're not going to get beat with a big play like that. So you're almost swaying me. I just think the road game is going to be tough. A low of 9 degrees. In Green Bay that day. And
yeah, but I feel like Seattle's used to cold weather. It's not like, maybe not that cold, but they're still used to being playing in the cold weather. And if Houston can do that well, Seattle's defense is as good as Houston's, and their offense is much better.
Well, that's for sure. That's for sure. I'm just being negative, maybe. That's all it is.
You're being cautiously optimistic.
Optimistic. I'm setting myself up. It's a win-win sort of thing where I could come back and say, well, you know, I told you. But if they win, hey, I'll take a win as well. So I'll stick with my pick, but you make some very good points.
All right. We'll go with that. And then before we get to the Sunday night game, Atlanta travels to L.A. after another dumb loss. Atlanta favored by 6. I think the Rams win here. It has nothing to do with Atlanta. Jeff Fisher needs to win out to go 8-8. It's just going to happen. There are just some things that happen. The moon comes up. The sun goes down. Jeff Fisher goes 8-8. Maybe it's a 7-9 year, but it feels like an 8-8 year for the Fishman. Getting the extension, it's a big year for him.
Well, we know one thing. We know Jeff Fisher. Well, we know a few things. We know, like you said, he's a 500 coach. Come hell or high water. We know also that Jeff Fisher has told us the punting game is on an all-time pace this year, coming along like it hasn't ever come along for them. Third, we know Jeff Fisher is going to be prepared with what the Atlanta Falcons have to offer. I'm sure he's watching tape on Andre Rison right now and Jamal Anderson right now.
He said this week, but they got to watch out for that Anderson kid. While Chris Chandler is...
Perfect.
I didn't mean to insult you, Chris Chandler, but it just comes out because you got hurt of me. And this Chris Chandler guy has a nice play action, but look out for that rookie Vic number 7 on the bench.
I know. It's going to be tough to stop. I mean, if Vic comes in and you do have...
It'll be a dogfight if Vic comes in, I can tell you that.
Oh, Jesus. The low hang, he goes for it and he takes it. Joe Horn is still dangerous out there. I think he's playing out there. God knows what's going to happen. Tony Gonzalez, I mean, a consummate professional.
Do you think Jeff Fisher just has like a mix of like highlights from every year and he's just watching that?
I do. I think it's a lack of effort coupled with not updating his highlight reels. And so he's watching tape from 15 years ago for the most part.
He's not even watching tape. He's watching like the old Steve Sable NFL films.
Yeah,
like,
good stuff.
Team tape. Like the Falcons had our famous one was too legit to quit in 92. It's a title.
That's right. That's the era that Jeff Fisher is living in for the most part. So he'll be prepared. It just might not be for your current Atlanta Falcons.
He'll be ready for Andre Rison and that Sanders kid.
that prime time or whatever they call him. He can play both ways if he needs to. So he's a guy we need to keep our eyes on, but regardless, you like the Rams here.
I like the Rams, and I just, as a foul, I just expect us to collapse at this point. And maybe the foul, it's kind of like you, maybe, where I'd be happy to be proven wrong, but
yeah,
it's just I see the Falcons losing this one, maybe winning out, and I see Jeff Fisher going 8-8, because that's what he does better. That means he's going to upset Seattle, too, so we're going to really test this Jeff Fisher 8-8 theory from me, but I think it starts this week.
I think that's all possible. I mean, the Rams, no matter what state the Rams are in, they play the Seahawks as if this is the toughest team in the NFL that the Seahawks ever have to face year after year. I mean, it's every single time. So you could be right. And if Atlanta does drop this, it's really not the worst thing in the world. Like you said, they win out. They get to the playoffs.
You get San Francisco, New Orleans, and Carolina, and all three look to be out of playoff contention by the time you play
them. Yeah.
San Francisco is now, but... New Orleans and Carolina probably will be too. So it's a winnable schedule. So I'm not worried. But I think you're going to blow one. Might as well give it to Jeff Fisher so you can go 8-8. All right, Sunday night, Dallas travels to New York. Dallas, a 3-point favorite, feels like we're going to have a big Eli Manning game.
I was just going to say the exact same thing. I mean, this is the game that I was hyping like a month ago. And of course, New York has lost games since then. And so it's not quite as big as I was hoping. But still. Still a lot on the line, and we've had some poor Giants performances, so wouldn't this be the time for an Eli Manning 360-yard, 3-touchdown game where he beats the Cowboys and ends their run?
Well, it seems like every year, though, Manning has a good game against the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. Mm-hmm. He had one of his best games of the year was against the Cowboys, I think, the start of the season, probably on Sunday Night Football. Dallas, like, they didn't look so great against Minnesota, and you can't even use the, well, they were on shorter time excuse. They had a whole week to prepare. I know Minnesota's D's look good. Minnesota's probably a little bit better in the record. But, I just, Dallas has got to lose at some point, right? Right?
Yeah. Yep, they do. It's the same. I'm going with the two big dogs, Dallas and Oakland, to lose this week. Both kind of for the same reasons, honestly. It's not that they're bad teams. They just need to lose, and they're playing in opposition in road games in both situations and teams that I think are capable of beating them. So I'm with you. I think the New York Giants get it done this week. Now, this, according to ticket prices, this is the most desirable game to go see this week, with tickets being available starting at $225. Would you care to guess what would be second in line? And let's throw the Monday night game out the window right now. Let's not talk about that, because we're going to talk about it in a second.
Green Bay, Seattle?
You're not far off, my friend. You're not far off at all. That would be third. Tied for third, a game we didn't talk about. Chicago at Detroit. Unbelievable. Ooh. And then second place, Denver at Tennessee. $91.
Price.
Yes.
There are a lot of Denver fans in Nashville.
Yep, that's it. Because, so that game's going to sell well.
Yeah.
Yeah, why is that?
You just get a lot of transplants. Like, Nashville, I'm assuming, is kind of similar to Atlanta in the sense that you end up with a lot of people who move there because corporations like to go there because they don't get taxed very much, and corporations don't like to hire people just from one state, especially when they're podunk states like Georgia and Tennessee. So you get a lot of people from different places, and you probably end up with a lot of people from the West Coast who are Denver fans who make their way out to Nashville, would be my guess.
Look at that there. That's more of that social science. Once again, the multifaceted.
Well, if you look at the skull shape of Nashville residents.
Oh dear, we're going even further. Yeah. This is
a little racial science for everybody.
Yeah,
it's just something to get you ready for Black History Month, when me and Dan will be doing the whole month in blackface.
Oh man,
I honor Black History.
So, I can't wait. I'll be there.
Really excited. Yeah. And then Monday night, Baltimore goes to New England. New England is 7-point favorite. I don't like that. Give me Baltimore catching 7. I even like Baltimore to win here. New England, not having Gronk has really hurt their offense more than people realize. They haven't run into a good defense since they've lost Gronk, like the way Baltimore's been playing. Baltimore's looked pretty good on offense. The New England defense hasn't been so sharp. Feels like Baltimore wins here. And they don't like New England at all. They're really excited for this game, I'd imagine, the Baltimore players.
Two things about it. First, I'll say this. You guys do a wonderful job hosting this podcast. I don't think I've said it enough. So, big fan of what you do. Secondly, Baltimore at New England. I like Baltimore as well. New England not looking impressive for all the reasons you said. Knocked down a peg. Gronk going out is huge. Danny Woodhead not available for this game for the Patriots.
And Corey Dillon out.
That's what I've heard as well. No Deion Branch in the equation. So, I mean, if really, they're down all their weapons.
Oh, but they have one, because he's still not suspended by Roger Goodell, Aaron Hernandez.
Oh,
still technically not suspended by the NFL. So
listed as questionable for the game, but that's not ruling out anybody. So I think who knows what you see. But even if Aaron Hernandez does come back, I like Baltimore as well. I mean, we talked them up so big, I feel it would be wrong for me to go against what we said earlier on. But genuinely, I believe that they're playing their best football right now that they've played all year. And I like them to take it to New England. And it could be wishful thinking, but that would certainly make me happy next Monday night.
Yeah. So, but, we were one of those nerds who started complaining about how the NFL maybe wasn't so entertaining earlier. This is a really good football weekend for the NFL, especially with college gone now. NFL's really coming a little more forefront into the picture with only one college game this week. And you've got major matchups for every primetime game. You can't really complain about that. Every primetime game is between playoff teams.
I mean, this is a week where you feel like these games, I mean, we made some picks there, but I can't say with 100% certainty that I'm confident in any of those picks, which is a good thing. What I'm saying there is there's a lot on the line, and these games could go even way. Even the bad games. The Jets and the 49ers play. I mean, how the hell are you supposed to pick that one, for crying out loud?
You don't know who the quarterback's going to be for either team, really.
Exactly. You got a game like Arizona at Miami. I mean, what do you figure happens there?
Want to talk about Arizona Miami for a second, actually, because Arizona, I don't get why I know why they're bad, because the offensive line has been pretty poor. There's no pass game, but David Johnson's having one of the best seasons of any other player in the NFL. That defense is still a top 10 defense in the NFL, I believe. Still, yeah. I don't get why Arizona's not very good. And maybe you know a little bit better. Being out there on the West Coast.
I think they are good. I just think, like you said, they've got holes that don't allow them to be consistent enough to win games on a regular basis. But, I mean, I'd pick them this week, that's for sure. I think, you've been a champion of David Johnson as the dark horse MVP since week 4 or so, if I'm not mistaken. This has been foretold.
Yeah, I'm interested in this game because there's another guy who's been playing very well. I'd won Mr. J.J.
Yeah.
That's his J.J.
His whole name. He hangs out with Chris Chandelier, from what I understand.
But he's been playing pretty well. Like, even with that offensive line really depleted from Miami, he had some pretty good runs even last week. In a loss, he was making goes miss in the backfield. So I think he still has a pretty good game against Arizona. And I don't hate the idea of Miami winning this game, because they have looked pretty good in the past couple of weeks. They kind of blew it last week, so maybe turn it around.
Yeah.
Get a good win this week.
Road game for the Cardinals, too. 10 a.m. start for a West Coast team or Southwest team. Yeah. Never easy, so you may be on to something. I mean, that's what we're talking about, though. We're talking about a game like San Diego at Carolina. I mean, we're not happy about Carolina, I should rephrase that. I'm sure you're plenty happy about Carolina, but we're not impressed with what they're doing. But who knows when San Diego goes there? I mean, I'd pick San Diego. Don't get me wrong, but it's not a sure thing by any stretch. I mean, who do you pick in Houston at Indianapolis? What happens in that game? What do we know about those teams right now?
Yeah, I don't. Houston in a non-primetime game. Do they even really televise that? Or
no, and that's when they thrive. They'll probably put up 44 points in some game that doesn't even exist to the rest.
Happens. Like, we just see Madden highlights.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, here's another one. The thing about this, Minnesota at Jacksonville. I mean, what once was a sure Minnesota Vikings pick no longer is the case. And Jacksonville at Jacksonville. Am I crazy to think that they could get that one done?
Could they stop Gus Bradley's third 8-game losing streak in his career?
I mean, I think so. I think this is the week when all bets are off when it comes to trends and streaks. I mean, could you tell me what the spread is by any chance? Would you happen to have that in front of you?
I sure might. I am interested in that game, though, but I think Minnesota – reason I really bring – I think Minnesota blows them out. That Minnesota defense is way better than people kind of understand, and Bortles is prone to making a lot of mistakes. And Minnesota's good at capitalizing on mistakes and getting points on the defensive side of the ball. Minnesota's favored by 3.5. We've got an over-under of 39.
Oh. I'll take the under. And 3.5 is not – I expected them to be favored by maybe 6 or something along those lines. But, I'll take Minnesota. Sorry to go against everything I said about the Jaguars, but I can't do it. Here's one more. I mean, we talked about it. This is what this week brings. We've talked about damn near every game, and we haven't talked about the Redskins at the Eagles. I mean, this has a different tone than it may have had 3 weeks ago. Yeah. What do you think here?
I mean, Cousins looked pretty bad last week, and Philadelphia does play good defense at home, and you're getting Ryan Matthews back. Not that that's mattered, because you're been in a hole lately and can't really get your run game going for Philadelphia. But Philadelphia wins an ugly one. They got to win at some point, and Washington should level out, I figure, at some point, too. So
Yeah. I like Philly at home. That's what I'll say here in this case. And Cousins is – I think he's about as good as I would think he would be, which is – decent, but he's inconsistent still, and so I'm not going to take him.
He's in peak Fitzpatrick mode.
Ooh,
that's what Mr. Cook.
Yeah, that's kind of a compliment, but more so representative of his lack of consistency, and, yes. And we're not impressed with him overall. So I think we're both going with the Eagles here.
I like the Eagles there, but I'm not shocked if they lose. But I don't think Washington's really that good.
No, I don't either. Don't be fooled.
Yeah. But that's NFL this week. As we get ready to kind of close out, anything else you're looking forward to sports-wise this weekend?
This weekend we have we have UFC 206. I know this isn't exactly the MMA podcast.
Yeah, I don't think they talk a lot of MMA on halfguarded.com. So I don't know if hopefully Coughlin doesn't make us cut this out, because I don't think he likes a lot of MMA talk on his shows.
Probably.
But go ahead. I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, this lost its big main event in Daniel Cormier and Anthony Rumble Johnson. That's out the window. So you got to lose something off the top there. But still a decent card, all things considered. I don't know if you know anything about it, but it's Max Holloway versus Anthony Pettis for the interim featherweight title, which is kind of goofy in its own
way. Is that the Conor McGregor belt? Yes. But they said Conor's keeping the belt. So it's an interim... Right. Interim title.
Double interim title is exactly what
it is. So it's the number one contender title.
Basically. It is. And the winner of this might fight Jose Aldo or something along those lines. So
it's really like the Crockett Cup.
It is. It's exactly what it is. UFC's version of the Crockett Cup. I mean, they've got new ownership. You might as well bring it back at this point in time. But, I mean, I like a surging Max Holloway to get this done. I mean, this is the guy out of all of Conor McGregor's opponents. Max Holloway's looked the most impressive since, and he was young when he fought Conor McGregor.
Oh, would you say more impressive than Diaz? Or just in the featherweight division?
Just in the featherweight division. Okay. Exactly. No, not more impressive than the guy that actually defeated Conor.
and knocked him silly in the second fight.
Yeah. Exactly. No, I'll take Holloway. Do you have a pick here? I mean, do you care, first and foremost?
If I knew who these people were, I sure would make a pick, and I've heard of Rumble Johnson. So that's the video game guy. That's the guy who got, the guy who got drug tested while he was, streaming on Twitch or something, maybe?
Oh, no, that's Demetrius.
Oh, that's Mighty Mouse. That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. Was Johnson a one hit? Does he have a nice punch or something? Like a knocks out people a lot, maybe?
Rumble Johnson's the scariest puncher in the division. Oh,
yes.
In the entire UFC right now.
Yeah. Yes. I saw one of his fights, yeah.
good. Yes. This is a man who used to fight at 170 pounds at welterweight, and now he's fighting where he should be fighting, at light heavyweight, and he's a scary man, but he's not on the card anymore, so I don't know what we're trying to sell.
So I'm really looking forward to that one.
yeah, exactly. And no, he didn't. He and Demetrius Johnson do have some things in common. They have the same last name, and they're black men, but they're separated by about 100 pounds. And
same. Well, yeah. Wes, if you look at their skull shape.
right. Here he comes.
And that was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was Travis sponsored segment of Skull Shape Size.
Yeah. So that's UFC 206 for you. There's some other nice fights. I'll take Donald Cerrone over Matt Brown, and
I've heard of Cerrone. Is that the cowboy man?
It is.
Give me the cowboy.
Donald Cowboy Cerrone against Matt Brown, the immortal Matt Brown, famous for overdosing on heroin at one point in his life and now coming back. And he's a tough guy, but I'll take Cerrone, who's looked very impressive at Walter.
Real Eric Berry kind of situation there for Matt Brown.
Yeah, similar dire straits, different routes to get there. But that's UFC 206, everybody.
And I was talking UFC. So there you go, half-guarded listeners who wanted more UFC. Get in here on the power.
There it is. Yeah, you're good to go now. How about you? Any other sports stories you're willing to talk about right now?
We were kind of talking before the show. Last week, you had Rockets Warriors go to double overtime in the NBA. So I think the NBA is starting to heat up just in time for Christmas. So I'm kind of – there's no particular game that's really piquing my fancy. But I want to watch these storylines develop because the NBA is about to heat up good. Like, December sports might be my favorite time of year for sports.
Yeah, well, we've talked about Christmas Day being the true start of the NBA season.
The casual regular season tip-off. Yeah. Kind of. For the casual viewer, that's when you want to start watching.
Yeah, man. I don't think people during football season just have enough brain power to get into all sport. I mean, you kind of have to pick and choose, unless, like you said, you're a hardcore NBA fan. It's kind of tough to get interested in, but when they hit you with that Christmas Day slate of games, then you're ready to go. And I mean, we've got, there are plenty of good storylines to get behind right now. All the teams you expect to be playing well are, with a few new additions. I mean, who expected the Charlotte Hornets to be 12-9 at this point in time? Maybe you did. I didn't. But it's shaping up to be another. I think the playoffs yet again this year will be very intriguing at the top.
No, and I think the Warriors, while they look like world beaters at times, have shown to have some flaws and some issues. So that's going to be fun to watch how they fix those things up, or do they, or does the coach figure out how to exploit them better? And but one last thing, Steve Kerr missed a smoking pot for his back injury. And how am I going to tell my kids about the NBA? And you've got a drug addict, you know, I tell my little boy Sandusky, named after my favorite Penn State coach ever, how am I going to tell him? Players in the NBA are smoking pot.
Oh, no. Yeah, I know. Not only a drug. I mean, marijuana. Can you believe it? I mean, the dirtiest of drugs.
The worst.
And a head coach, a professional of the best team in the league, and this guy is doing this.
Stoner.
I mean, what do we know? It's child rape in one sport. It's marijuana use in another. I mean, I don't know where to live. Yeah, I don't know where to look anymore. Yeah.
Wes, you know what? NFL got a lot of hard stuff about Greg Hardy, but at least they suspended him for doing something wrong. I don't see the NBA doing this to Kerr. It's ridiculous.
No, they haven't done anything. And I mean, it's disgusting. I mean, we've got African Americans in our sport. This just goes to show what we're saying right now. I mean, it is ridiculous. Steve Kerr, a guy who, from by all accounts, is suffering through life with his back injury and all the ramifications of it. And
he's trying not to develop a pill addiction. That's what he's trying to do. And the fact that this is even a story, and sadly didn't work for Kerr. So maybe that should be part of it. But it should show people that you don't have to. There are other means, maybe, instead of getting it hooked on Oxycontin or something if you have back problems. Maybe cannabis does work for some people. It may not work for everybody, but
it's worth a shot.
Yeah, and it's better than being addicted, like what happens to so many, you know, millions of Americans who, you know, have back surgery and then get hooked on drugs. So, props to Steve Kerr for saying, "I don't want to put, you know, poison in my body."
Yeah, that is the smart decision. That's the way to go. And you look at I was just reading about Marcus Lattimore earlier today and how pills.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, that was my Oxycontin.
I'm sorry. Is that on your end? Or is that on my end?
I prescribed this. Yeah. It's okay.
We're good to go.
Yeah, my doctor works behind a convenience store, but it's all legit. Trust me.
Yeah. Yeah, my doctor is all over my usage, and so much so that I haven't actually been into the office in probably over a year at this point. But they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But props to Steve Kerr, and it is the way to go, I think, or at least worth a shot, as we said. And who knows, if it didn't work for him now, I guess he's got no other choice but to go hit the harder stuff.
Yeah, cut off your back.
I didn't.
That's what Bill Romanowski would do. Cut off his back.
Well, he might be able to fix a number of the problems that we just mentioned here previously in our sports. You put that guy in charge, and he's going to take care of things and make sure.
I think Trump's appointed him to a position.
I don't think you're going too far out on a limb with that prediction right there.
All right, but all right, Wes. Any last thoughts before we get out of here?
I don't know. Any thoughts on Riley Cooper? I mean, it seems like we touch on him once a week, so is he?
You know what? I think Riley Cooper, Redskins should bring him in. Racist name, racist player, bam. That just goes together.
Yeah.
You know?
That would turn things around, probably. I mean, I was looking for him in the news recently, but he's pretty much faded away.
Yeah, I think he's head of skull science at Liberty University.
Yeah, very well could be.
It's Romanowski. Are leading up the racial sciences division.
Yep.
That's probably our quota on racial science talk ever on the Power Hour.
Until February.
Yeah, but next week, me and Dan will be back, hopefully, out of prison, ready to preview the bowls as we do our first bowl extravaganza.
Okay, one thing before we go. Do you have a sleeper, under-the-radar kind of bowl? Let's just say out of the top four, two games, rather. What bowl game are you looking forward to the most?
I am USC-Penn State, and I want to watch I want the stadium to collapse and just kill both fan bases. That's right. What I'm really rooting for.
Well, I can see.
Yeah. That or...
I can tell you this. Go ahead.
I'm going to be biased. I want to watch Auburn-Oklahoma in the Sugar Bowl. I'm excited to watch my team in the best bowl possible if you're not Alabama in the SEC. So.
Any early thoughts? Just to,
oh, we're going to get killed by Oklahoma, probably. But we'll see. Depends on how a quarterback plays. Okay. But I'll know more in half a month.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, I'll leave that to you guys to really break that down.
Yeah, but we'll break down the first half of bowl games, and there are some pretty interesting ones. It's hard to call off the top of my head, but there were some that I kind of liked. Anything that piqued your fancy, Wes, before we get out of here?
I will enjoy watching USC put Penn State underwater in that Rose Bowl game. I mean, I think that'll be a victory, and hopefully that doesn't hinder the healing at Penn State too much. But I, for one, will enjoy them being knocked a step back. I'm really looking for the Big Ten to take a hit after all this talk about how great it was. I think they get exposed over the next month.
I'd like to watch FSU kill Michigan, too. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah.
All right. But for Wes, for Dan, I'm Zachary, and play the music or something. Play that music, Jason. Play us out of here.